Okay, so thanks for the introduction. So indeed, today we'll talk to you about dynamic scheduling, hotspot mitigation, and in the particular context of private clouds, because we consider that the objective we pursue is not necessarily the objective everyone knows about. So we want to share that to you. So a bit of context. I am from the Nutanix company, which is an enterprise cloud company. We have a few 50K customers worldwide. More important than here is that we have about 40,000 private clouds that are deployed everywhere. And in that case, of course, it matters to be effective for every cloud that are there. And in terms of cluster design, we moved away from convergent infrastructures that proposed a SAN-based access to the IOs that were only remote to hyper-convergent infrastructures. And in that case, on top of each node, you have a controller VM hosting a control storage, and they expose distributed file systems that tend to favor local reads to the VM. So in that case, we expect to get much better latency for IO reading. To have a better view of what happened inside private clouds, you can't only focus on only one cloud because of the diversity of the customers we have. So in that case, we built this characterization based on about 600 clouds that were inside my data set for this paper. And it may be disappointing for you, but outside the public clouds, there is numerous private clouds, and most of them are very small, actually. Most of the time, it is like four nodes, six nodes, with about 13 VMs per node. And this is surprising for people, but in fact, it works fine, but because nodes are quite beefy in terms of cores, in terms of memory. In that case, that's just enough for most of the small and medium businesses. Of course, we have very long tail distribution, and biggest cloud in my data set was about 43 nodes, and highest consolidation ratio was 100 VM per node in that case. We oversubscribed the cores by default, so a bit more than one vCPU per thread, up to 941, again here, very long tail distribution. And the practical load is quite moderated because we have a lot of dynamic allocations. On host side, we don't do memory over commitment, but others do. And so for CPU, it's 25%, 2% only of I/O per second. So the load may not be very exciting from traditional researcher point of view. And more importantly, is that there is absolutely no relationship between the VM sizing and the practical usage of the resource. So of course, we get some de facto standards in terms of sizing, number of CPU and RAM. But in practice, the practical CPU usage is not correlated with the memory usage or with the higher usage. So you don't have uniformly big VM or uniformly small VMs. It's completely a mix. And you have plenty of hybrid workloads that have to run on the customer clouds. You will have much more information about the distribution inside the paper. So inside those clouds, because we have dynamic allocation of resources, we can have hotspots. And hotspot is basically when the practical load on a node exceeds a given threshold for a certain amount of time. And Acropolis Dynamic Scheduler is a hot scheduler that is aiming at mitigating those hotspots. So it is cron-based. Basically, it is called every 15 minutes. It is threshold-based. We consider that there is a hotspot on a node if the load exceeds 85%. This is configurable as usual, but this is something we consider to be viable as a default value. As everyone knows, of course, placement problems are fun problems, so placement problems are NP-hard problems, which means that there is right now still no holy grail. It's not possible to find one placement algorithm that will be able to fit every kind of workloads. You may not be able to get a solution in time, or will not be able to get a solution at all if you are using an approximation algorithm. So in that case, everyone tends to specialize the scheduler to be sure that it will be effective for the workload is known. Typically, if you have this notion of tendency, I know that workloads tend to behave that way. In that case, I can tune a bit the scheduler decision capabilities. But in that case, you have to take care about not reducing the applicability range of it. And this is what we will talk about. So basically, while most of the time people are looking for being the best for 1% clouds, typically for you are using Alibaba workload traces or Google workload trace, for example, that's very respectable if you're working for public clouds. But for private clouds, we are millions of private clouds. In that case, it would be just fine to be just okay, but for 99% of the clouds in the world. And this is what we want to get, of course. So how to achieve that? So inside ADS, instead of using heuristics that tend to be biased, we use an exact approach. And this is built on top of BetterPlace, the research prototype I built in fact, before joining the company. And on the back end of BetterPlace, you have constraint programming. So this is very convenient because as this is an exact approach, it tends to avoid overfiltering. So good point on that. In terms of objective, the objective is quite standard. So usually we want to avoid to migrate too much VM. So we want to avoid to migrate too much memory over the network. But because we are in this hyper-converged infrastructures, we also want to avoid losing data locality. If you move the VM is no longer co-located with the hot IOs on the node. So in that case, we have to consider this notion of data locality to avoid to move such VM. And we also have a heuristic to help the objective that tend to balance. It's not really about balancing, and it has been modified to support multiple dimensions and complementary worst fitting. And in terms of actuations, there is two outputs. Typically, if ADS found a solution, so if it exists a solution where there is no longer any hotspots, it will perform the VM migrations up to two in parallel to don't saturate the network. And if the problem is undecidable or if there is no solution proved, then in case we just notify the administrator about the situation, basically saying that he should destroy VM, relax some constraints, or eventually buy new nodes. So based on that, what kind of lesson did we learn? So ADS is generally available since end of 2016. And to understand what we did for these last 3 years, we picked a data set, locally about 2,000 and a half clusters that called ADS at least once, and we revised the optimization we made and the design choices we made also. So first, what about working with an exact approach, which is not the default way? First, no worry, even if it is an exact approach, the service latency is good enough because in this context, clouds are quite small. So 4 nodes, 6 nodes, exact approach are enough. We still have 0.5 undecidable problems. Undecidable because it means that given 30 seconds, which is the SLA for the service, we were not able to find if there is a solution or not. So it means that even if the problem is small, the problem may still be hard. Because we are using the exact approach also, we have incremental optimization up to the point that we prove the optimality, and this is quite effective for a significant share of the workloads. We can reduce the mitigation plans that were originally computed by 50% up to 75%. So very interesting for the customers that don't like to observe plenty of migrations at any moment of time. And in terms of scalability, in fact, we don't need really to worry about that because first, even if we have clusters with like 500, 1,000 nodes, it will be good enough. But in practice, any kind of cloud providers provide some kind of sizing limits for their clusters. For example, for DRS, I think it is 32. For Hyper-V, it is 64 nodes. So in that case, you will never be able to get a private cloud that is bigger than this size. And if we have plenty of customers that have like hundreds and thousands of nodes, it's just that in practice, they have multiple clusters with different scheduling space, for example, different storage area as well. And in that case, we just provide them the illusion that they have one unique infrastructure. Well, in fact, on the back end, you have multiple disjoint infrastructures. In the paper, you will have much more lesson learned about the engineering particularities that may be interesting. So we have this system that works quite fine, but the undecidable rate, it's not zero. And there are still some problems that we are not sure about the optimality of them. Maybe there is something better. So of course, over the time, over the 3 years, we wanted to optimize the solver to reduce those values. But in that case, the problem most of the time is we have to take care of about the false quick wins. Typically, you got a customer ticket saying that the system was not effective in that case, he's suspicious about that. So okay, you look at the instance, you are able to get it, you can reproduce the problem, and you find the patch. Cool, so now you are able to support this new use case, but as it was mentioned before, now it works for this new use case, but is it still effective for the 1,000th use case you had before? And this is our first things we have to consider most of the time. So first, you have to take care about your change. Maybe the way you design the features will be biased. So maybe you don't have a data set that is good enough, representative enough to be sure that your patch will be successful. Maybe it will lead to regressions. And in our case, a 1% regression, for me, it may lead to, let's say, 10 to 20 to 50 customer tickets I will have to handle for my next quarter. And I don't want that, of course. And over the time, the improvement you will done will get smaller and smaller relatively. And because you will just tend to chase outliers. And at some point, you will no longer be able to find the holy grail optimization that passed everywhere. So we'll have to find trade-off. At some point, you will have to decide, okay, now I can solve this problem, but I will have to alter a bit the quality of the computed solution for 1%, 2%, 3% of the customers. And in that case, you have to discuss and you have to debate internally about, is this feature well designed, and if this feature is safe enough to go into the wild. So we have three stories inside the papers. I will just mention one here about the use of local search. So local search is it's a common solution to reduce the problem size. If you know the workload, we have a low overload. We have local hotspots. So in that case, when you start to solve the problem, it is not very stupid to say that most of the VM will stay on their node. And in fact, in this, the probability to relocate the VM on the hotspot is very high. The probability to relocate the other VMs is quite low. So in that case, if you are doing local search, what you do is that you pin all the supposedly well-placed VM, and you only focus on the VMs that were on the hotspots. This is an optimization that was inside BetterPlace right at the beginning, because the paper about BetterPlace was working with clusters with 5,000 nodes, because reviewers asked us to have 5,000 nodes. And in that case, the optimization was very effective for such kind of workloads. And this has been also enabled inside ADS since end of 2016, because during the prototyping phase, when people designed the system, they thought about imaginary workloads they would have in practice. And in that case, when they forged such workloads, they observed that indeed local search was fruitful and maybe required. But 1 year after, we started to have some tickets in that case, and indeed, the tickets reported that the use of the pure local search was a bit dangerous because it tends to overfilter, because by design, local search overfilters. So indeed, in terms of decidable rate, compared to a solution with no local search, we reduced by 2.34% the number of clusters that were covered by this solution. We got good numbers in terms of latency and in terms of number of migrations. So we reconsidered the solving methodology in that case, and we turned to a two-phase resolution. So in that case, first pass, we use local search. Then if the system states there is no solution proved, maybe this is a false positive, maybe this is an overfiltering. So in that case, we retry in a full resolution mode. So this is the second bar chart. And in that case, it was quite effective. We improved significantly the decidable rate. And surprisingly, in fact, we perform better than if we do not use local search at all. So the hybrid approach tends to be better. We were a bit slower in terms of latency, but that was acceptable. And we got good numbers in terms of migrations. And last year, during my holidays, in fact, I got two tickets about two customers, different customers, on the same week that complained about an issue inside ADS as well. And in fact, the way we tuned the two-round approaches was good for most of the people, but not good for them, because basically it put the solver in the phase transitions. So in fact, we have to redesign the system again to consider these two use cases. Here it was very important because it was customers that observed the issue. So in that case, you cannot just say, well, look elsewhere, it will be fine. So here we solved the issue. Indeed, we improved very, very little the decidable rate, but very good numbers in terms of latency. But sadly, here we got some kind of regression in terms of quality. For a few workloads, the solution that were generated gets more migrations. So here we talk between each other, and we found that it is still viable because we can still find a solution, even if it is less good, that is still acceptable. In terms of practical effectiveness, this is quite a tough subject, in fact. Because first, if I want to check that it works in practice easily, it works In practice, first, I can do a lab experiment. But basically, if I want to do a lab experiment, I can forge the workload I want, and I can get the result I want. It will not be very useful. We can't do A/B testing because we will not turn off the service inside the customer clusters just for fun, you know, and do a proper comparison. It does not hold. So the question we ask to test right now, the practical effectiveness, is just what is the success? How many clusters are in a clean state after one call to IDS? And if it is user plan, 73% of the time, no more hotspot after the call. If it states that it is undecidable or there is no solution, only 12% of the time the cluster is in clean state. Numbers may be, the gap between the two numbers is interesting, but why it's not 100% on the left? Why it's not 0% on the right? Workloads are volatile, so by default, it means that hotspots arise on their own and disappear on their own. For the number of the right, when we state there is no solution, we notify the administrator, and in that case, the administrator is advised to kill VM, and possibly it also solves the hotspot on its own. And on the left, why not 100%, but because maybe new hotspots arise just after we solve the problem, so in that case, it is not the same situation that before, but it is still an issue. And maybe also we are over-conservative in the way we estimate the resource demand of the VM. We can change, we can tweak a bit the algorithm, but in that case, it will change the number, maybe it will create more issues. And in fact, the point is that the success rate of the system is clearly a consequence of subjective modeling choices. If I change the definition, I will change the practical results, but I don't know if my definition is really better than the previous definition. So to conclude, it's not about being able to support the largest cloud ever. It's for us, it's about supporting as many private clouds as possible. It's about supporting diversity. And in that case, over the time, we tend to do incremental improvement and just based from observation, avoid assumptions. Of course, small wins matters. And in that case, the more customers you have, the more the small win is important. 1% over 10,000 customer base is significant. And over the time you are chasing the outliers, in that case, not all the enhancements are safe, and you will have to trade quality for capability. You have to check that every change are fine against the other one. And I did not evoke that during the talk, but tools and knowledge bases are crucial if you want to develop this kind of system. First, because it will enable you to exhibit and characterize outliers as soon as possible. And it will all be about preventing regression. For that, we have plenty of tooling internally to track that and help us at finding if indeed or not we'll have a regression before going to the wild. And yeah, as I said, we are hiring. That's all. Thanks for your attention. And if you have any questions, right now or during the poster session.
Yeah, we have a few minutes for questions.
Rusty Sears. So I'm curious, like, if in some world where you had perfect knowledge, you could have a cluster of a certain size, and in some other world where you just implemented like the most naive thing, like random placement or balls and bins, like power of two or something, you'd have a larger cluster. Do you have any idea of sort of what that ratio is and where you're sitting on the spectrum? Like, is this getting you kind of the last 5% of what's theoretically possible, or is there a big gap in?
Again, can you go again?
So imagine, I guess I'm just wondering how this would compare to a straw man or you know, like an oracle, if that makes sense.
The thing is that you can't, it's hard to know about the oracle because we don't know if it is possible to get the perfect solution. The problems are NP hard. So we can't compute the right solution because we don't know if it exists. So in that case, you have some kind of vicious circles, because if you don't know the perfect answer, you can check if you are the perfect answer. So you have to try. So this is why, in our case, the use of exact solvers is interesting, because it provides strong quality self-assessment on the theoretical level still. But if I know that I have a 75% optimality proof, which means I'm doing quite a good job to finding the best solution. If I have 0.5% undecidable rates, I know it may be acceptable, and I know if it is a big issue and how much I must prioritize it to solve the problem. Did I reply correctly?
Yeah, I guess I was just wondering, like, do you have any way of like measuring like maybe like how much hotter clients are able to run their clusters, or like number of SLA violations they have at a high level, or curious, like from a practical perspective.
Okay, like, so basically like how frequent, you say how frequent we get hotspots and stuff like that?
Yeah, or just like, are people able to deploy more virtual machines on the same hardware platform, yeah, or do they have better QoS, or you know, that sort of thing?
Okay, so on the practical sensors that are running on the cloud, I don't have the low level, right now I don't have the low level performance indicators like typically CPU ready that are there. And the issue we have also is that because of hardware features like hyper-threading, getting performance indicators can be misleading for the because we can have workloads that are hyper-threading friendly and those that are not. And in that case, it's creating troubles about being sure about the performance loss.
Thanks.
I think we can take one more question. And in that time, the second speaker, Hyung Kun, can you please set up? Okay, there you are. Any questions by the time he could set up? Yeah. Maybe then I'm going to make a request for, if at all feasible, from all of academia, if the data set is available, anonymized.
So the thing is that this one is on customer data. So in fact that would be gold to be able to open source it. It is anonymized on our side. Mm-hmm. I have to check what I can do. On the other side, we have some clusters that I use internally because of the regression paranoid, and in that case, this may be a good data set, way less interesting than pure customer data set, but it may help. But the thing is that we have to check if we can, even after anonymization, if you can provide customer workloads.
Okay. Thank you. A round of applause for Fabian once again.